The tracks were easy to follow, 8 big wheels in each wag, driving their relentless way south. The general didn't seem to be in too much of a hurry, probably unaware that he was still being followed. JB was a good tracker, but he was happy to concede to the Native Americans. The youngest, man sees behind sun, was the finest. He led the way on a spirited pinto, occasionally vaulting from the blanket across the animal's back, stopping and running his fingers across the furrows, feeling the temperature and the moisture of the hatched marks.
We are only about 4 or 5 hours behind them.
Could be that they're just taking it easy to try and economize on gas. Probably their HQ got a good store of it.
They reached the edge of the threatening storm a short time later. The air had the bitter flavor of ozone from the lightning that had strafed the mountainside, spooking the animals, making them skittish and difficult. Judas, in particular, was even more stubborn than usual, taking a bloody chunk out of the thigh of one of the Navajo, who made the foolish mistake of riding in too close to the mule. A number of small streams flowed down toward the arid plain, all of them filled to overflowing, bubbling and racing over the quartz-lined rocks. The gradient had become steeper, and the tracks of the wag showed that the hill had been a problem. At one point, with a steep drop to the right, there were clear skid marks, going to the brink of the fall.
Slowing them down, Ryan.
Yeah, not helping us any.
Storm's riding ahead of us. We're on his tail. They're in his heart.
Doc found himself at the head of the procession, perched on the big barrel-chested roan gelding, leading the first of the trio of pack horses on a strong rawhide line tied to his own pommel. The trail was narrower, less than 20 feet across. To the left was a rock face, craggy and irregular, streaming with muddied water. To the right, the trail vanished into singing space. There had been a metal fence bordering the old road back in the times of the long winters, but it had long gone, leaving only occasional rotted iron posts. As he rounded a sharp bend, half turned in the saddle to call something out to Mildred, who was next in line, Doc barely registered the mutey cougar. The creature was poised to spring on a spur of wet, gray rock a dozen feet above him.
Ivan!
His hand fumbled for the butt of the lama in his belt, but Doc knew in his heart that he was going to be too slow. It leapt. The cougar measured a good 12 feet and stood nearly 4 feet tall at the shoulder. Its thrusting rear paw slipped in the mud that coated the rock, throwing it slightly off its aim, which momentarily saved Doc's life. The cougar had aimed its spring at the throat of the man, but it fell short, its honed claws raking across the chest of the gelding. Its weight knocked the horse sideways, sideways toward the drop into the ravine on the right of the trail. Doc clung to the horse's neck as the animal, spooked out of its skull, reared and kicked out. Mildred was behind the string of pack animals, with Judas on a lead rein just behind her. The mule was so vicious that it would have been madness to try to attach it to the other three horses. JB was third, with the rest of the party strung out behind him. The Navajo had chosen to ride as a rear guard, all 9 of them together. Only Mildred, on the crown of the bend in the track, saw what was happening.
Doc!
The enormous buff-colored animal, its heaving flanks streaked with gray-orange mud, its jaws flecked with foam, its eyes staring blindly, landed awkwardly in the rutted highway. It spun and snapped for a moment at its own hind legs, then powered up from a crouch, straight at the belly of Doc's mount. The dainty little bay mare that Mildred rode was also spooked by the attack of the raging carnivore. She took a dozen rapid pecking steps backward, making Judas bare his teeth at her. The mule then kicked out behind it at JB's gelding, starting a chain reaction of utter confusion, with those farther down the line having no idea what was going on up at the front. Doc had his sword stick jammed to his own saddlebag. He made a desperate grab for it.
Damn it all to hell!
But the cougar was beneath him, disemboweling his horse with a single raking blow. The three pack animals had totally lost all control, rearing and edging one another toward the sheer drop over the cliff. Mildred drew her pistol, gripping the ZKR 551 in her right hand, struggling to control her terrified mare with her left.
Calm the fuck down!
She was no great horsewoman and found it impossible to take a shot at the muted creature. Her only chance was to slip from the saddle of her mount, but it was rearing and kicking so wildly that it was hopeless. As Mildred watched, Doc's horse started to fall sideways, dying from the ferocious attack.
Jacksuits!
The cougar had slithered away a few yards, sliding on its stomach through the slimy mud, its eyes locked on the white-haired old man. And one of the pack animals was teetering on the brink of the cliff, its hooves scrabbling for grip.
Oh, fuck this?
Mildred fired, feeling the .38 buck in her hand, but she had no idea where the bullets went. All she knew for certain was that neither of them struck the crouching cougar.
Yeah!
Ryan arrived now. His big gray stallion brushed past Mildred, the Sig Sauer drawn in his right hand, his heels kicking into the flanks of his horse to urge it on.
Jump, Doc! Jump now!
The last of the string of pack animals was going over, its head thrown back, spine arched like a bent bow, its weight dragging the other two after it. The tautened line attached to Doc's saddle began to pull at his dying gelding.
Jump!
Ryan fought against his own animal's terror, trying to draw a bead on the snarling cougar that was flattened against the streaming rocks, less than 10 paces away from him. Doc half leapt and half tumbled from the saddle, managing to snatch at the lion's head hilt of the sword stick as he toppled off, on the side away from the ravine. On the same side, however, as the rabid carnivore, Mildred could only watch helplessly. JB and the others jostled together to try to find out what was happening around the gooseneck bend in the trail. Ryan fired twice, both rounds missed by a mile. The cougar's corded muscles tensed as it readied itself to drive in at the helpless figure of Doc, rolling in a disorganized tangle of arms and legs in the dirt. Ryan knew in that instant that he was going to be too late to save his old friend. One blow from either of the cougar's front paws would be enough to take Doc's skull off his shoulders. The beast leapt once more. Ryan threw himself from the high saddle, straight at the animal, swinging the heavy blaster at the cougar's head. The P226's barrel smashed into the creature's jaw, splintering one of its front teeth, knocking it off balance, so that it rolled sideways in a spitting bundle of blind fury. Blood trickled from its open mouth, mixing with the sticky froth. Ryan came up into a combat crouch, the double-action blaster steady in his hand, drilling toward the mutie animal. Doc was scrabbling on hands and knees, trying to locate the butt of his lama.
Bastard!
The cougar crouched again, only the tip of its tail twitching, conscious of a new pain in its mouth, breathing thickly, swallowing with difficulty. Ryan aimed the Sig Sauer carefully at the center of the animal's face. The big cat leapt once more. He drilled the bullet through its clogged nostrils, past the soft tissue, into the boiling chamber of its brain. The cougar landed awkwardly. Its head rocked on its heavily muscled neck. Darkness descended over its eyes, and there was a strange chill feeling at the rear of its angular skull.
Again, Ryan, one more!
The mortally wounded cougar had somehow struggled up to its feet, standing unsteadily. Blood and brain tissue were trickling from the shattered back of its head, and more bright arterial blood dripped steadily into the dull, watery mud below it. Ryan shot it through the chest, a little to the right, splintering ribs and ripping the irregularly pounding heart to shreds of torn muscle. The cougar toppled on its side, its legs carrying on for several seconds with a strained walking motion, as though it didn't realize that it was dead. And then it was still.
By the three Kennedys.
Doc?
The three pack horses had vanished over the drop and were about to pull Doc's roan after them. The old man had risen shakily to his feet, taking a hesitant step toward the doomed animal.
Leave it, Doc. It's too late.
The saddle horse suddenly disappeared.
I fear that I needs must rely on my own legs for transport.
Not necessarily.
Mildred grinned, pulling at the leading rein.
There's Judas here, ready and able, but not very willing.
I would rather die, madam, than trust myself to that spavined brute.
Ryan was already reloading the Sig Sauer, looking back at the watching faces of his friends and the Navajo. He turned to Doc.
Could be daft to try and make it that way.
'Tis still to be preferred to that devil's walking parody of all four-footed things.
Judas was standing splay-legged, glaring at the angry old man. Sensing it was at the center of the discussion, it threw back its head.
Come on, Doc. He just wants to be better friends with you.
Then why don't you ride the donkey, and I'll take over your pony?
Thanks, but no thanks, Doc.
Ryan grabbed at the bridle of his own horse and swung himself back into the saddle.
Time's wasting, Doc. Looks to me like Judas or nothing.
And I fear that it will have to be nothing.
Is that your last word, Doc?
Doc folded his arms across his scrawny chest and nodded.
Indeed. That is my last word.
Mildred heeled her mount alongside Christy.
Doc looks like a fish trying to ride a bicycle.
More like a goat astride an alligator.
Oh, yes. Merriment and whatnot, you cackling harpies. You two would have been most admirably suited to sit knitting beneath the shadow of Madame la Guillotine and jeering at the tumble of every aristocratic pate that rolled into the blood-sodden straw.
Temper, temper, Dr. Tanner.
Mildred wagged a reproving finger at the red-faced old man, perched uncomfortably on the back of Judas.
I confess most freely that I had no idea what temper meant until I attempted to ride this misbegotten son of a sea cook. My dear and saintly mother once hired an Irish cook. Flaming red hair, begging your pardon, Christy, my dear. No connection, I am most certain.
The mule stopped suddenly, nearly tipping Doc over its head.
Stupid beast.
He gave it a clout around the side of the jaw with a clenched fist, and it immediately resumed its halting gait forward.
How about this Irish cook?
What's Irish mean?
It would take me far too long to answer that, Master Corder. But I tell you, she had... what was her name? Mary? Marie? That was the name of the latest flame.
What are you talking about, Doc? Try and stick to the point, will you?
Mary it was. Hair like... Anyway, she had the most ferocious temper I ever knew. I would only have been about 9 or 10, and I took pleasure in teasing the poor woman. I knew her rages, and that gave a spice of true terror to the teasing. But she taught me a lesson one day. Sadly, my mother dismissed her on the spot, but I still remember it.
What did you do, Doc?
Mildred swatted midges away from her face. After reaching the edge of the storm, the dark clouds had raced ahead of them, leaving a sultry, leaden calm. A heavy sky lowered upon the 16 riders. Nearly 3 hours had slipped by since the sudden attack from the Mutie Cougar, and they were moving along southward, still following the blurred tracks of the two wags.
A simple matter of changing over the sugar and the salt as Mary was preparing luncheon. The potatoes and the stew were peculiarly sweet, while the lemon mousse, her pride and joy, was oddly bitter.
That's really shitty, Doc. I'll be glad when we finally rest some. Anyway, what did this redhead cook do to punish you? I hope that it was nothing trivial.
The woman came from a long line of powerful giants. She took advantage of my relative weakness to strip me of my knickerbockers and my drawers.
What?
Took off his pants.
Thank you, John Barrymore.
Then what?
Why, she covered my... all of... in molasses.
All over your cock and balls?
Yes, my dear young Dean. Precisely as you so explicitly put it. And indeed, all over my rectal orifice. That was not so uncomfortable in itself, but the removal was. To recall it still brings tears to my eyes.
And your mother fired her? Shame on her and shame on you. Still.
Still what, Dr. Wyeth?
It explains a lot about you, Doc.
He would have pursued the matter further, but Judas chose that moment to sit down like a ton of bricks, making the old man slide backward over his rump, finishing in the mud.
By the three candidates!
Man sees behind Sun, the youngest of the Native Americans, spotted a steep-sided narrow arroyo a couple of hundred yards ahead of them, not far from the crest of one of the rolling sagebrush-covered hills.
This way!
Why are we going there, Dad?
The companions and Indians walked their mounts in a long line, with the first spots of rain already beginning to patter heavily around them.
In a chem storm, the higher up you are and the more exposed you are, the more dangerous it is.
I know that, but we're going up the slope.
The Navajos say we can get inside that arroyo, protect us from chem lightning.
What about a flash flood? I thought you should never shelter in a small valley in a storm.
Huh. True again, Dean. That's why we go up, so as we can go down. No risk of getting trapped in a flash flood if you're close to the top of a rise.
And so it proved.
Ah, fire blast.
Ryan sat hunched over, his back against the steep slope of the arroyo, his mind numbed by the ceaseless pounding of the rain on the top of his head and nape. It was as bad as anything he could remember. Trader had once said that the only thing rain did to a healthy man or woman was make them wet. But Ryan could recall a near tragedy when Trader's saying had been proved false. There had been an engineer on Warwag 2. His name was Lek, a fat guy with only one eyebrow and a silver streak through his dark hair, the result of a knife scar and a pest hole on an island near L.A. He'd always been unbalanced, and the trader had warned him a couple of times about his behavior. One day in the Apps, they'd been camped in the middle of a torrential downpour. The rain slanted against the sextile roofs and walls of the two ponderous wags, making conversation almost impossible. There'd been an argument. Ryan couldn't remember the details. In the close confines of the war wags, it was all too easy to have a major row about a minor disagreement. Lek had freaked out. Ryan had always been suspicious that the engineer was secretly into Jolt. The trader was strict on drug users and abusers. At least, Lek had been clever enough not to get caught. Until that moment. Going claustro was what it was called. The man had darted to one of the side doors and started to open the sec bolts.
Should I?
No, I don't want to fight inside the wag.
Ryan could still remember the way the noise of the storm grew suddenly much louder as the vanadium steel door swung open, hastily pulled shut by someone.
Okay.
Everyone had crowded to the outports along the side of the war wag. Through the smeared armor glass, they saw that Lek stood with his arms straight down at his sides, hanging limp, as if someone had simultaneously dislocated both of his shoulders. His legs were apart, as if he were braced against the enormous weight of water tumbling onto him. His shaved head was bowed, his uniform instantly soaked through. Trader used the external mic.
Come in and stop fucking around!
Lek seemed to ignore the voice. Then he turned slowly toward the wag, his face splitting into a madman smile, very gentle and very homicidal.
All right then, seal the fucking wag. That bastard doesn't get back in.
The silver streak in the mat of sodden hair glistened like a mag flare, and the streaming face shone like a polished melon as Lek slowly lifted his head to stare directly upward, opening his mouth wide. Hunniker had been pressed against Ryan, squinting through the same circular window.
Fuckhead's going to drown himself. Shit for brains.
Hunniker wasn't often wrong. Lek was almost invisible, the tumbling shroud of rain masking his outline, so that he looked like a vaguely humanoid statue, veiled in solid water. Ryan rubbed at the condensation that misted the window, trying to see more clearly what was happening. Lek seemed almost to be melting, sinking to his knees, his mouth open, filling with the solid rain, his staring eyes pits of frothing liquid.
Want me to go out and bring him in, traitor? I could deck him first.
No.
He's down.
The madman had slithered onto his back, his chest heaving, his hands now lifted toward the merciless heavens. But he had still made no attempt to save himself by turning onto his stomach, keeping his face out of the downpour. In the here and now, hunched down in the arroyo, Ryan was breathing slowly through his half-open mouth, trying to avoid sucking in water from the storm. Lightning rocked the ground, striking less than 100 yards away, outside the walls of the gully. The bitter stench of the chemstorm flooded his nostrils, and the thunder pounded at his brain. It addled his mind, making it difficult to remember what he'd been remembering. Lek, down and dying and drowning. As the rain tumbled into Lek's open mouth, flooding his nostrils, he suddenly began to thrash around as though he'd realized too late what was happening to him, sensing his own dreadful, choking doom. The New Mexico rain now felt as though it were gathering momentum and power.
He's going into spasm.
Lek thrashed from side to side, his fingers nodding above his head, though he was still making no obvious effort to try to keep the torrent from pouring into his nose and mouth. His chest was heaving as he coughed and retched, yellowish water bubbling from between his gaping jaws. Suddenly, Lek's back arched and stiffened, so that the only points of contact between his body and the streaming earth were his heels and the crown of his head. A moment later, everything relaxed as all the cords were cut.
Heart failure.
Yeah. You're right, JB.
I know.
The New Mexico rain now felt as though it were gathering momentum and power. It bounced back off the ground, filling the air with a fine spray of tiny droplets. For a moment, there was a scintilla of panic on Ryan's part, fluttering at the back of his mind, the fear that he would no longer be able to breathe properly without inhaling the invasive liquid into his strained lungs and end like Lek. Ryan could still recall the way the raindrops bounced off the blind, staring eyes. He also remembered the traitor had refused to have the body buried, regarding it a total waste of time and energy. It was late afternoon when one of the Navajo glimpsed the two small wags, cresting a rise about 3 miles ahead of them. The pursuers were closing in.